He's back from the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. How are you doing, Dieter? You're live. That's good.
I'm tired, but I don't know if I'm emotionally or physically tired. Steph Curry is certainly not waking me up with this cold streak, man. He's the only thing colder than Green Bay, Wisconsin right now.
Oh, my goodness. That's how we're getting into this. This is Locked On Warriors.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks for making Locked On Warriors your first listen. We're free and available on all platforms. He's Dieter Kurtenbach. I'm Cyrus Sautzes. You can follow him on Twitter at Dieter. You can follow me on Twitter at DocSurf Roadshow. And you can follow this program on Twitter at Locked On Dubs. I want to talk football, but this is not a football show. We're talking about the Warriors. First of all, I want to say, Dieter, this was one of the greatest weekends in my recent memory of Bay Area sports, between the Warriors somehow pulling off a 2-0 record, given how crappy they've been playing, the Niners somehow pulling off that win thanks to a blocked punt and Aaron Rodgers being Aaron Rodgers, of course. But we're here to talk Warriors. Did you get a chance to watch the games while you're surrounded by big fat people who love cheese?
Well, first off, I fit in great in that category. I was able to watch a good deal of it. I wasn't able to watch the final minutes of the game against the Jazz until it was well said and done. Let me put it to you this way. It didn't feel like a win. it felt real sluggish, man. It's nice that they got the W, but that was a Garoppolovian performance by some Warriors on that night, just getting carried over the finish line. You know my stance on the Utah Jazz. I think they're fraudulent. I think that Rudy Gobert wants a lot of credit for something God gave him and he hasn't done much with.
Right.
I just don't see them as an actual title contender, and they've done absolutely nothing to disprove that. At the same time, these Golden State Warriors right now, expectedly, don't look anything like a title contender either. And Steph is playing so poorly. I got some numbers for you. Obviously, we know, you know, the shooting percentage from the field, the shooting percentage from beyond the arc, 41 and 37. But that all kind of equates into a stat that I prefer, which is, you know, effective field goal percentage. And Steph is the guy in the NBA who made effective field goal percentage the number, at least right. In my opinion. James Harden is all about true shooting percentage because it has the free throws in it. I don't care about free throws. I think free throws are for cowards. I want effective shooting percentage. And Steph Curry currently has an effective shooting percentage after that 1-for-11 game from beyond the arc against Utah of 53.5%. The last time that he had a rating that low was 2009-2010 when he was a rookie. And the three-point shot didn't really exist in the league.
Can you explain to the audience what an effective shooting percentage is so that
Yeah, of course. So it's basically just a weighted shooting percentage. A three-point shot obviously counts for three. A two-pointer counts for two. So they grade a three-point shot as worth one more point. So it's weighted in that regard. So 50 is the break-even to just being a decent, effective player. For reference, Russell Westbrook is always under 50. And Steph Curry is consistently around 60. And that means that essentially he's getting points on 60% of his touches, or 60% of his shots. It is jarring what we're seeing here. And it can't be attributed to just one single thing, whether it's the hand, which is very understandable given how bad that injury looked in the moment. We were all having flashbacks along with Curry to two seasons ago, and Aaron Baines off of that. But, you know, the legs don't seem totally right. He's apparently missing free throws and in warmups and stuff. And I think that we might be, I say this and watch him go off on Tuesday, but I think we might be beyond the point where we just say, oh, it will fix itself. It will just change. He's in a slump, whatever. Like, this is not, he's Steph Curry. This doesn't happen. and the fact that it's continuing to happen, that there really has been no repetitive respite. Like, you get one good game, you get three bad ones. You get one good game, you get five bad ones. The fact that there hasn't been a streak, the fact that there hasn't been a flurry, the fact that, you know, even in the game where he gets his game winner against Houston, great shot, awesome separation. Why are the Warriors having to hit a game winner against Houston, who is admittedly playing better basketball? Something's up, and it stinks because they're not in a position to just say, sit down for a while, you know, take your time, figure it out, take four or five games off in a row and we'll get you right, because Draymond's out for who knows how long. Now, Klay Thompson didn't practice today. We're talking on Monday with the knee injury. And they're going to be hyper cautious about that. There's no James Wiseman. I know he doesn't really fit into the category there, but, you know, Andre Iguodala is on one of his sabbaticals that he takes so often during the season. Like, they just don't, they don't have the kind of cushion they once had. And they certainly don't have the reinforcements that they need to allow Steph to take a couple of days off and get right. So he's going to have to go out there, and I don't know if he's suffering or mentally, physically, combination, all the three, top, bottom, middle. But something is absolutely not right, and it needs to get right. And I because I can't pinpoint what the problem is, it's very hard for me to pinpoint the solution too. And that makes this not so much fun.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone can pinpoint it. I want to quickly share, this slide. This was following the game, where he was just very direct and he was very to the point. And, whether this encourages Dub Nation or discourages them, that's up to you to decide. But this was from Slater,
I presume.
From AC, yeah, correct. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different sources for this. This was a part of the post-game press conference. Yeah. And here's Stephen Curry following the Utah Jazz victory.
Do you feel anything mechanically is up? Or, I mean, do you just, what do you feel about your shot right now?
Who gives a damn about excuses or anything that anybody wants to hear about why you either make shots or you miss shots? So you got to stop making some shots.
Do you feel there is, even if you're not going to reveal them, reasons behind it?
No.
Okay. How your hands feel, by the way? I don't think we've asked.
I'm still attached to my body, and I'm still getting up. Still getting up plenty of attempts, so I'm trying to have fun with it. It's a big picture perspective on, you know, how you approach the game, the work that you put in, and it's obviously frustrating. I want to shoot the ball. It's frustrating in the games. I kicked the chair the other day. For that reason, so it's not like I don't care. You know, you're not trying to figure it out, but I don't get preoccupied with it. To Mari's question, like, of that's the only part of my game that matters. It will matter. I need to, you know, make shots for us to, you know, get to the level that we want to be at. But other than that, not worried about it.
And I want to also show this stat while I'm sharing my screen for just a minute. This is courtesy of Stat Muse that shows the worst shooting performances of Steph Curry's career. I don't know, it always weirds me out when they put Stephen Curry's career, granted minimum 20 attempts. And of the six, five are this season. And the thing is, every single excuse I hear from people is logical. For example, I've heard, well, Draymond Green's absence is playing a part because Steph is now the primary ball handler and he's taking more on himself. Well, this was happening before Draymond went out. The only thing I can pinpoint is the timing of his struggles when it began, and it was during the pursuit of the three-point mark. It never recovered after that. I mean, he's had good nights here and there, but there's no consistency. I don't know if it's exhaustion. I was at the game Friday night, decided to put on the old media credential. And I'd honestly do that a lot more if the commute wasn't such a bitch. I don't know how you do it. I know Alameda and San Ramon are two different worlds, but even from Alameda crossing that bridge, I don't know how you do it half the time. But I was sitting courtside with my friend Rick Barry. They honored him that night, and Steph was missing a lot of warmups, but his vibe was good. Like, his energy was still positive. He still had that same joyful and exuberance of just happiness, of just love for the game. They're just not falling. Some of them are clearly forced. You could tell. I almost wonder if he should go back to the rule book for most players when they struggle with deep shots, which is just go for the easy ones. Go for the simple layups. Go for, you know, to drive to the paint and shoot those simple floaters if you have to.
But the problem with that is, and you're not wrong, because, like, part of me is thinking, well, he hasn't shot, you know, you go through that StatMuse stat and it's like, well, how many times before this, when he was struggling, did he actually shoot 20 shots in a game. Like, how, you know, this is a relatively new occurrence for one Wardell Stephen Curry, because when he first came into extreme prominence in the league, well, if he had a bad game, the Warriors were still such a team and so far ahead of everybody else, perhaps even light years, that they didn't need him to shoot. Just the gravity alone was enough to create the imbalance. And right. The gravity alone is still very powerful, but yeah, it is. He has taken it upon himself to play modern basketball. And when it works, I mean, the modern basketball that he helped create and then was taken to whole other levels over the last couple of years when he had Kevin Durant there to just carry the load for him if he was having a bad night, and Kevin vice versa. And those two were so rare, because, you know, when are those two going to have a bad night on the same night? Like, never. I don't think it ever happened. So, and they never really had bad nights because they didn't have the load of an entire team on their shoulders, right. But for maybe once a month, you know, just for grins. And they enjoyed it because it felt like old times and being on a real basketball team or something to that effect. Regardless, he's putting up a ton of shots. He has to put up a ton of shots. And so the notion that, oh, just go and let's go into the lane and do it. Cool. Now he gets to go up against four dudes ready to hack his neck off in the lane. Like, shooting legitimately, I think there's an argument that shooting from three for Steph Curry at distance is an easier thing for him to do because it's less physically demanding. All it requires is cardio and timing. I mean, certainly no one else can do it the way he does it when he is on, but he is in such great shape that he just chuck it from anywhere and it gets, you know, further extended out and out and out. So I don't know if that's the solution, which is do the harder thing. But logically speaking, he would have a higher field goal percentage if he does that. He finishes at the rim as well as anybody not named Kyrie Irving for his size. So it's kind of this oxymoronic, it's certainly paradoxical concept of he needs to probably stop shooting as many threes, but then he's going to be even more taxed because he's going into the lane and doing all this stuff. And by the way, the gravity really works best when he's outside and then he's in. You know, so
yeah.
I don't know if there's an easy solution to this. I do like the fact that he's exploring more in the mid-range as of late. It doesn't seem as if he wants to make that really part of his full-time bag. And that's understandable. You're this far into the damn game. Why are we pretending as if you're something you're not? But we saw it, you know, in Houston, that's a highlight moment. It was his first, actual buzzer beater game winner in his NBA career, which says something in and of itself about, you know, the stature and size and why it might not be a good idea for him to just go to the rack every play. yeah. But, that shot show, it was a nice example of him being more of a mid-range artist this year. And I think that that's something that absolutely needs to be part of the game. But it can't be the backbone of it. So, I think that the Warriors, and particularly Steve Kerr and Steph, as we heard there, and I, you know, you could do nothing but appreciate his professionalism and his, you know, inability to feel sorry for himself, which, you know, just, if you're wondering why this team wins championships, that guy, then he also has Draymond Green. You get those two together and Klay Thompson, who's a one of one. And it's like, yeah, I can see how that created a good culture. I could also see how any of those guys in a different environment could not work so well. But they had it all. They had the right brew going, and they still do, in my opinion. I just feel like, you know, he probably needs a couple of days off and they just can't give it to him. And that's a problem.
When we come back, we're going to delve more into this. I mean, granted, the Warriors went 2-0, but it wasn't like the most encouraging 2-0 that you're going to have, especially for this Warriors team. First, Dieter, I haven't had a chance to download Truebill yet.
What I love your experience?
Yeah, describe your experience with Truebill.
Save me a ton of money, man. Listen, I don't know how many people out there are hardcore about their budgets and going deep into their credit card statements every month. And just making sure that, hey, everything's on the up and up here. I try to do it. That was a good month. And then it's been probably 5 years since that happened. And it's nice to have a system like Truebill, because it's so easy to sign up for stuff and it's so hard to cancel it. And that's the entire point of this wild internet commerce marketplace we got going on here.
Right.
And if you're not on top of it, they'll get you, man. And you'll be paying somebody $9, $12, $50 a month. And you're like, damn, I thought I canceled that 4.5 years ago. Congratulations, you got. And Truebill is Truebill legitimately will automate that process for you and just say, hey, buddy, it's like Tinder for bad charges. Just say, hey, buddy,
there you go.
What are you thinking about this? And you're just like, swipe that bad boy left. Take care of that for me, Truebill. And they do. And it saved me a ton of cash.
On average, it saves people up to $720 a year. And again, it's hard to tell what you're subscribing to, what you're not subscribing to, what you're paying each month. Truebill has over 2 million users and helped them save over $100 million. Don't fall for subscription totally scams.
Legitimately, I think I saved like couple hundo.
Damn, I gotta do that.
And if you think about, like, you just think about, like, when would this have been dealt with? Years from now? That's not good. No. I was paying for 2 Netflixes at one point. It's like, that ain't good.
I know I'm doing something there myself. I got to sign up for this. Next time I'm doing this free, I'll be a subscriber. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at truebill.com/lockedonNBA. Go right now. truebill.com/lockedonNBA. It could save you thousands a year. And this show is also brought to you by Built Bar. It's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. Dieter, you've tried these things. I'm still waiting for my package. You love them, right?
I've been a lifelong fat boy, and I try to be a skinny boy. And you know, let me tell you, I am no stranger to the alternate meal plan. And Built Bar was for a good stretch. And this was well before I started working with Locked On here. Built Bar was part of the daily routine. Have one of those bad boys for breakfast, and you could rock until like 6, 7 p.m. I mean, it was those things. When they're not just – they're built because a lot of people use them to like put on some strong muscle because it's got a great – protein to carb ratio and all that, but these things are also built to last. It sits in your stomach, and this is a good thing, like just a log, and you're able to function all day, but like you're not hungry. You are dealt with. You are satiated. The Built Bar is a great product, man. I mean, I got a hierarchy of bars. Built Bar's very high on that hierarchy, and I'd be saying that even if they weren't paying us, because let me tell you, it's not number one, but it's pretty close to number one.
It's filling. It's healthy. That's all you need to hear. Go to built.com. Use promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen. The NBA trade deadline is Thursday, February 10th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, and Locked On NBA will be covering it live from 2 to 4 p.m. Join Kim Becker, John Corrales, Locked On Fantasy Basketball host Josh Lloyd, and NBA veteran Antonio Daniels, and get analysis of every blockbuster move. Subscribe to Locked On NBA YouTube and turn your notifications on so you know when they go live.
That's going to be a real dud, by the way. I mean, they got a great cast, but the NBA trade deadline is really shaping up to suck.
It could. Very strong.
That's just where it's at right now. We'll let you know if that changes, but my goodness. I'm driving around in Wisconsin. You make a couple phone calls, keep your mind off of the monotony.
Yeah.
I made a phone call to a friend of mine who works in the league and was like, hey, man, is there just like anything? I know nothing's happening with the Warriors, but like, just generally curious if there's, you know, anything floating around the league, like just in general, stuff that I should look out for that maybe would affect me. And this guy's like, man, where are you driving right now? Like, I'm in Wisconsin. It's like, what's around you? I said, nothing. He goes, same over here.
Well, I'll tell you, if the Lakers actually had assets to offer, we would see a trade, but they got nothing to put on the table that any other team wants. And then you got Dort Elvis, who's playing his egotistical, quote unquote mind games that everyone can transparently see right through. It is crazy. But so I think given the way the Warriors are playing right now, first of all, your boy Kevon Looney, in my opinion, is the best player on the team at the moment. He is producing tremendously, both with rebounding, inside toughness, scoring.
I love Kevon Looney, but the fact that that's a statement that I can't initially clap back on is a real problem for this team.
It is a problem. And so, Bob Myers was on another podcast, I won't name it, but he basically said that it's unlikely the Warriors are going to make a move, What concerns me about this is two things. One, James Wiseman, even if he does come back, which no one knows now if he's ever even going to, this is turning into worst case scenario for the Warriors.
It's a calamity.
He won't have the experience to contribute in the postseason. So he's a wash. If Kevon Looney gets hurt, this team is screwed. And it's not like he has a tremendous track record of health. Like it's not like
it's literally what he's literally known best for, not being healthy.
Yes. So I'm concerned. I for some reason I've become synonymous on social media with Paul Millsap and the Warriors for better or worse. I still think he would be a great addition to this team, especially now. What are your thoughts on this? Are you
Millsap?
No. Just on Bob Myers in general. And I guess Millsap. Yeah. But just the fact the Warriors are probably going to stand pat. Is that a good decision, or do you think that's going to bite them in the ass?
Well, I think it depends on what we're asking in terms of scale, right? So there's no big move that can be made that can appreciably allow the Warriors to do what it is they want to do. And that is, on a macro level, three things. They want to win a championship this year. Okay. I don't see a move out there that significantly, I'm talking like 10% in Las Vegas, increases the Warriors' chances of winning a title just this year.
Right.
The second thing they want to do is they want to maintain longevity. They want to, if they're not going to win a title, they want to be in the mix every year from here on out. And that means Kuminga. They still very much believe that means Wiseman. And by the way, people might say, well, it doesn't mean Wiseman anymore. Well, then, hell, don't you think every other team in the NBA knows that, and therefore he has no trade value? James Wiseman has turned into my 2011 Hyundai Sonata. It has far more value to me than it does to anything else, and I'm not sure when it will actually get back on the road. So by the way, tremendous car when actually, you know, operating. it's all those warranties and recalls I did.
Dude, Hyundai 2011 versus Hyundai 2021 or 2022 is night and day, man. They're actually like legitimate now. It's crazy.
I got the first go around of legitimate Hyundais, and I'm exaggerating for effect. I do love my car. The fact that I've kept it this long. We're also rocking a 2007 Honda CRV. So clearly we have high tastes in the Kurtenbach household.
You're reasonable. You're practical. I love it.
I park my car on the streets of San Francisco. And so it's nevertheless, there's no, you know, Kuminga, Poole, you know, they think that this is, you know, Wiggins to a degree, this is the next wave. So when old man Curry and old man Draymond and old man Clay are there, those fine gentlemen that I just named will prop them up and maintain in a Spurs-like fashion, which really didn't happen as people remember it, but because it was kind of just Kawhi Leonard. But they will, you know, and it will be just this graceful passing of the torch, and the flames will be slowly diverging between the years. It's really romantic and not going to happen that way, but this is their concept. And you know what? I can certainly think of worse things to do, especially when you paid X amount of money for a stadium and you have bills that are due. I would do everything in my power to make sure that I didn't have a crappy basketball team, because I need to make sure that asses remain planted in seats. Otherwise, we're all going bankrupt. So totally get that logic. And then the third thing is that the Warriors are at a 6X repeater tax right now. They're paying $6 on every dollar they spend. So bringing in somebody somehow, I have no actual concept of how they would be able to do this trade-wise, because outside of the four main contracts that they have, the next highest paid person is Kevon Looney, who, again, we have just determined is not only the Warriors' best current player, but also their most indispensable player outside of those previously named four.
They are free agent too. Yeah,
they don't have the guys that they don't have, like, assets. You know, they're in a much better situation than the Lakers, but like, they don't have just like movable dudes on a contract that is expiring or that someone might be interested in. What they have is bottom, top, and one dude in the middle, and it's Kevon Looney waving hello to everybody. So it's just totally unreasonable to think. Now, buyout market's a different ball game. This is a team that's always, just because of those things that I mentioned, this was a team that was never going to make a trade. It was always going to be a buyout market thing. And buyout market, I don't think it would, you know how I feel about centers in the modern NBA. We could go on and on and on about it. Doesn't matter. It wouldn't hurt them to get a very large gentleman on the buyout market, whomever that might be. Paul Millsap doesn't do it for me because Paul Millsap doesn't solve the problem that would be presented if Kevon Looney misses a game, which is that they don't have anybody who can actually play the five. As much as Otto Porter and Nemanja Bjelica have done a nice job and just sort of standing there and pretending to be fives, those dudes are stretch wings who just are bigger than, you know, the wispy ones like Andrew Wiggins.
You don't think Millsap could play the five? I totally think he could play that. He's the same height as Looney. You know, he's
not defensively. He can't. Not for a lick. Here's a wonderful question to ask anybody who's on the Paul Millsap train. The Brooklyn Nets are supposedly a championship contender, and yet they're going to buy him out.
Well, because exactly, supposedly, and you're giving way too much credit to Sean Marks for. Because you're basically insinuating he's a genius, and because he made a mistake.
Where was the insinuation of the genius? There is a team that is competing for a title in Brooklyn, allegedly. New York.
Yes, allegedly.
Look at the Eastern Conference standings. They got Kevin fucking Durant on their team. Like, they do. What are we doing here? Like, they're clearly a team that has the ability to win a title, and they say we don't need Paul Millsap to do that. And the Golden State Warriors are going to say, oh, that's the guy that we need to get there. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. It's logically unsound.
I don't like the Nets argument just because they have plenty of big men already. That's the same team that also let go of DeAndre Jordan because they have a girth of it at that position. And Millsap can shoot the three. I don't think he's as bad defensively as you say he is. He would be the only defensive liability on the team. And when you're playing against a team like, let's say, the Jazz, who have a Rudy Gobert, you don't need a great defender in a position like that. You need a body on him.
First off, Paul Millsap has an effective field goal percentage, which we just went over, of 40 this year.
Well, in 5 minutes a game? I don't like gauging that. I want to see him play 15 to 20 before making proper assessments. He's not a locker room cancer. He's not
nothing but class. Part of
this, right? Like, I think chemistry is very important. I'm not saying
he's been 11 minutes a game, by the way.
Oh, he's playing 11. Okay, so he's not like the fix-all for everything. And not to mention, like, to me, the Nets system versus the Warriors system is night and day. Like, The Warriors make players better. And I do think that if he came in here, he would improve. All I'm saying is, to me, the Warriors are in dire need of someone who can rebound. And I know you don't appreciate that as much as I do, but in games where the Warriors are being outshot by 8 field goal attempts a game, like against the Houston Rockets, for example, last week against the Grizzlies, they had 18 fewer attempts. That's where rebounding is important because you're giving up second chance points, second chance opportunities to other teams. And I don't like that. I don't want to see other teams continuing to gain momentum by getting offensive rebounds. Turnovers are a huge part of that too. But whether it's Millsap, whether it's another body, they need something.
Another body's fine. This body don't work. He's 6'7". He's 6'7". He might be built like a shit brick house back in the day, but like this is not a guy who is going to clean the block. I mean, here's the thing with Looney. He's 6'9". But he plays thick and he plays tall because he's fundamentally sound in all of those basic fundamental things that you need to do to be a center or like an official center in the league, of which there are maybe 7. So he boxes out like nobody's business. He is great. Like his super skills are two things that will never show up on a box score, which are setting picks on the perimeter where he is a human barricade.
Agreed.
And tipping out rebounds. He's great at it. He's exceptional at it. And he has a knack for rebounding, which, again, just a minuscule of a knack for rebounding compared to, you know, the 90s or the early 2000s goes a long way. Millsap doesn't have a nose for the ball as a rebounder at all.
I know,
and he doesn't set good picks. And he doesn't play good defense.
I'm not hating on Looney.
No one's hating on Looney. I'm saying that Millsap is in any way a facsimile for Kevon Looney is to hold on to the notion of Paul Millsap when he was 31, 32, 33, and not the Paul Millsap we've seen for the last 3 years, last two in Denver and then this year in Brooklyn at 34, 35, 36, where he is officially and unequivocally washed.
I don't know. This is the first season. His efficiency numbers are not great. I wouldn't apply the term washed until
he's a career 50% effective field goal shooter. I mean, like, he's washed. He's washed. I mean, it happens to the best of us, but like,
he's the same age as David West was. If you compare David West's numbers to his at their point in this career, I'm guessing it would be very similar. I just David look, if it's not Millsap, fine. If it's not Millsap, we won't agree on that, fine. But the Warriors need to get some reinforcement down low, because Looney and Bielitsa as your only two big men is not going to win a championship.
I agree
with that. And they have to prepare. I just don't
need to get back Smiley Geach. That's what
I think. let's real quickly talk about Bet Online, one of our official sponsors. Bet Online would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. It's a new year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's a lot of money. Just use our promo code Locked On to get started and get that 50% welcome bonus from football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms as we wrap things up here. One player I think that could make a significant difference who is on the roster and who could give them some help inside is Jonathan Kuminga, who when he plays, is producing. But the problem is, in the last game, for example, he only had 8 minutes. Moses Moody, who when he goes to Santa Cruz, lights it up. Then he comes back up here and gets 0 minutes. Mm-hmm. Do you care about Steve Kerr's discriminatory behavior toward the rookies? Do you like it? Do you dislike it? What are your thoughts on that?
I think discriminatory behavior, while technically sound, might not fly. How about do I care for Steve Kerr's current rotation? No, there's a weirdness to it. And yes, I think that, listen, I am not somebody who gets buried in the minutiae of the rotations unless it is like aggressively egregious. I will say this as a defense of Steve Kerr, because I do believe that, especially with this kind of stuff, we have to represent both sides. There is no empirical right, nor an empirical wrong. Jonathan Kuminga's inability to not foul when he's on the floor is no bueno. It's a bad situation, and it hurts the Warriors in more ways than just this guy's going to the line. It slows the game down for Golden State, and as athletic and as impressive as Kuminga can be as a floor runner, the fact that you can't trust him defensively, and again, understanding he only had one foul in that 8-21, not being able to trust him defensively to not mess up and not slow the game down and not put the Warriors in a situation that is disadvantageous is problematic. Now, the flip side is, well, how else are you supposed to get this guy ready? How else are you supposed to get this guy minutes? And I don't know the right answer. I think that the way that they were using him early in the, early in the season was a sort of break glass in case of emergency situation, right? Where, hey, the game is slowed down. We need some vigor. We need something new. Here's some Jonathan Kuminga, and go out there and just bowl in a China shop, mess some stuff up for better or for worse. And because the Warriors thrive in chaos, or at least I thought they used to. Maybe that is I thought that maybe that's a Draymond Green situation. They don't. God,
he's missed. He is missed, man. You
know, there's no question. He only does about three dozen things that no one else on the floor could replicate. Right. So I would like to see steady regular minutes for Kuminga. The issue is, when Steph Curry is on the floor, you want the game going fast. Kuminga, while he can absolutely run at that pace with total ease, so often slows down the game. I also don't want to see Jonathan Kuminga out on the floor with the second unit, because that doesn't really do anything for anybody. And I don't think it helps the second unit, and I don't think it helps the development of Jonathan Kuminga. So there's some empathy here for Steve Kerr in the peculiarity of the predicament. And I don't know what the right answer is, but I think that there is something to be said for getting a more static Steph operation. I know for a fact that Steph prefers first quarter, third quarter, second half of second quarter, second
his
half.
Old,
of
his old quarter. Rotation that he did for like 9 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know he prefers that because it allows him to get into a rhythm. He can work through some stuff if he has a bad start. He likes to play the macro game. And then, by the way, when he comes in, when it's crunch time, you know, end of the first half and, you know, end of the game, he's already amped, right? Like those situations already call for more, but he works his way into games so very often. And I think that he's missing that because he just 9 years of routine. So going back to that might make some sense. Would it put other people in a predicament? Perhaps the Klay Thompson thing. The Klay Thompson thing is really screwing him up. No, Draymond obviously screws him up. You know, Klay, who knows now when Klay is going to be back to 30-something minutes per game Klay? Like, we can't say. We can't say when Klay's rotation is going to be locked in because he's always going to miss the second end of back-to-backs, and now he's just not even playing in any games. So Iguodala just taking his sabbaticals is a big problem because you can't trust him to be the second unit guy. So the rotations are totally out of whack, and I see no recourse here for them solidifying anytime soon. And Kerr has deemed it most appropriate, best to have Curry in a very different rotation as to, you know, improve the team's overall play throughout the course of the game. I have no evidence to say that's not working. I mean, who's to say it wouldn't be worse if it was just Jordan Poole at the beginning of the second quarter and nobody else? But the Kuminga thing, it's like he has proven himself, or at least the Warriors have said that he's proven himself to be worthy of regular NBA rotation time. Right. Not in the same way of a Gary Payton second, but certainly in some way. And if that is no longer the case, they need to express that fully and go down there and let him drop 50 on some G Leaguers' heads or something. Because, you know, I like the Moody plan. I liked the Kuminga plan where it was going. They have the Warriors, at least in my eyes, and who knows what that's worth, have redeemed themselves to a certain amount for how they handled James Wiseman, which was extremely haphazard and piecemeal as last season went along. They really didn't know, like they looked like they knew what they were doing. But this year, I'd like to think that they know what they're doing, but right now it's a little bit confusing. And again, sympathy for Steve Kerr in this spot, because I don't think that there's a real clear cut answer, but I think they might just have to bite the bullet and eat it a little bit with Kuminga, because the more he plays, I think it's unquestioned at this point of the season. I know we're still fairly early, but we're not late either. The more he plays, the better he gets. So they got to play.
Yeah, exactly. I even saw him in the post the other day and he was excelling at it. I couldn't believe my eyes.
I'd love more. I think you're on, I think for the first time in a long time, you're onto something here with him at the five.
Oh, Kuminga at the five?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, possibly. I wasn't even going there. I just want him to play more. I just like this is an infographic here. This 4-game stretch included 3 games of that horrendous road trip where they went 1-3.
Yeah.
And then the first game at home, but he was averaging 17.5 points per game, over 6 rebounds, 3 assists.
I mean, that was mostly the Detroit game.
Well, that was a 4-game stretch though. I mean, so
if you, no, if you, I get it. I get it. It's just, you know, Kuminga at the five is something that deserves to be explored.
I just think it's just more minutes, and I'd like to see Moody just a little more. I just, you know, I'm glad Kerr realized that playing Iggy and JTA together doesn't work. That's a disaster.
No, JTA can only play when Andre doesn't play, and Andre can only play when JTA doesn't play. One of those things is not like the other. But
agreed. And
yeah, JTA is not an effective basketball player for this team unless he's in the Andre Iguodala role.
Yes. Yeah. And I think we've seen he's not a good replacement for Draymond Green. You made a great point last week that Iguodala fits the Draymond Green role the best when Green is out. But again, Iggy's on this schedule at 38 years of age where they're saving him for the playoffs. And
yeah,
that's where we're at.
Tenured professor, man.
What's up?
tenured professor.
Yeah. So before we go, you've got you're taking the reins tomorrow. The Warriors are playing the Mavericks. It's on TNT, nationally televised.
We'll do a post game.
Okay, you're gonna do a post game. Okay, sounds good. So I guess you'll be recapping that game where Tim Hardaway Jr. is probably gonna score 35 with
guaranteed. Dwight Powell's gonna go off
with six threes, and Finney Smith's gonna light it up. Yeah, it just seems to always happen with the Mavericks. So, all right, my man,
guaranteed.
You can follow Dieter Kurnbach on Twitter at Dieter. You can follow me on Twitter at DogSurfRocho, and you can follow this program on Twitter at Locked On Dubs. Thanks for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. Now make your second listen Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q. So, dude, I gotta say this, man. I found your boy Q on Twitter.
We found him. He's a superstar.
He calls himself your boy Q. Hey, that's why he's just that's his name. Your boy.
It's
Q.
Working.
He's the PD of a sports talk radio station in Las Vegas. And that's the extent of it. And we engaged for a brief minute.
A pro's pro.
With expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling, it's free and available on all platforms. Always a pleasure, my man. Welcome back. I'm glad you're in better weather. And
yeah, me too.
Until the next time, folks. Later.